are we gonna do?
Maybe we could build a fire, sing a couple of songs, huh? Why don't we try that?
Hello and welcome to the Emerald City Video Podcast. I'm Russ Burlingame, and I'm here with Zachary Roberts. And usually when we get together and do these kind of five for five, or if you like this, try this kind of things, it's centered around some movie that just came out, and it's like, oh, if you're going to go to the movie this weekend, you know, like we just did with John Wick, which I thought was one of our better episodes. Unfortunately, this time we decided to get together and talk about the passing of Bill Paxton, who was a... Yeah. It's funny because there was a discussion kind of that went on in, I think, the entertainment press about how to talk about him, because he was essentially a really, really good character actor, but he'd been in some really iconic movies and some very iconic, memorable roles, and so there were a lot of people who were saying, you know, Hollywood legend. And then there was a kind of a pushback of like, well, blah, 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 blah. So I don't know how to refer to him other than, you know, I was referring to him in all my articles as beloved character actor Bill Paxton, which isn't entirely fair, because while he spent most of his career being a great character actor playing kind of minor roles in big movies, he also, especially later in life, started to take more lead roles. Most of the movies we're talking about today, he played kind of a co-lead or a lead role in Frailty, which is one of the movies we're going to discuss. He actually directed the movie. Yeah. And I think a lot of people probably, you know, especially people under a certain age, probably remember him most from Big Love, where he was, again, kind of a co-lead, because all of the sister wives were also major, major characters. But, you know, when you have the one male lead playing opposite a handful of women, there's a conceit that, like, he's the ostensible main character because all of the women are kind of playing off of him.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I agree with you on the kind of discussion. I would allow him to be kind of a larger figure than just like beloved character actor. But that may have to do with the fact that I really dig everything I've ever seen him in. Like, we were having this discussion like right before, where I was saying, well, you know, he's one of those guys that I know he's never going to be like the main character for the most part in any of these big, and especially larger films, like whether it be the latest thing, Edge of Tomorrow.
Oh, yeah.
Like some big blockbuster film, he's going to be a bit part. But like the fact that he's in it, that will be, that's like 20% more likely I'll go see it.
Yeah.
You know, it's kind of like all of the people that he's always confused with, which I figure we'll get into, the Bill Pullmans and I'm trying to think of Jeff Bridges, kind of that, those three guys that it's like, well, was it Bill Pullman, Bill Paxton, or Jeff Bridges that was in that film? I don't remember. I feel like any of those guys, I go, yeah, no, that's a much more likelihood that I'm going to go see this film, or watch this TV show if they're on a TV show. Like I had absolutely no interest in Big Love other than Bill Paxton being in it.
Yeah.
Like everything about the TV show just didn't interest me other than the few times I've caught clips of it. I'm like, he's really good.
Yeah.
God damn it. I should probably watch that.
Yeah. I can't even remember why I ended up watching it. I remember enjoying particularly the first couple of seasons. But it really was just one of those, maybe just like my ex-girlfriend was really into it or something, but it was one of those things where I probably wouldn't have watched it if not for him. And then once I actually saw it, it was like, you know, eventually I drifted away from it. I don't think that I even know how it ended, but it was a thing that I remember, like, I owned the DVD at one point of the first season or two, because it was like that much a part of our kind of weekly routine to turn it on.
Yeah. No, I mean, it was like, I remember when it came out, it was like that, the HBO Undertaker show,
Six Feet Under.
Blanking on my 6 Feet Under. It was the show that you had to watch for a while. Like it was mandatory for like two seasons. Like if you didn't watch it, you were like, what the fuck is wrong with you? It's kind of like Game of Thrones is now, and you know, and Walking Dead is, has been for the last, how long has Walking Dead been running? It feels like 30, 40 years now. It feels like longer than The Simpsons.
Yeah.
Because I'm just so fucking tired of talking about it.
about the same time as The Big Bang Theory.
I feel like that's why I didn't get the job at comicbook.com. It's just my disdain for The Walking Dead. Anyway. But anyway, what was the first movie that we were going to talk about today, Russ?
Well, I figure we'll lead with Frailty, because Frailty is an interesting film in that, again, it was actually directed by Paxton. One of the really interesting things about the movie is that there's a, right after Paxton passed away, Film School Rejects put together a listicle that was 39 things we learned about Frailty from Bill Paxton's director commentary. And I'll try to remember to include that in like the show notes, so to speak. So if you're actually getting this off of Podbean instead of finding it on Twitter or iTunes, you should be able to just click right down to the link. But it's one of those movies that I remember recommending to a lot of people at the video store. This one and Session 9 both kind of were low budget, like suspense horror movies that came out around the same time. And I just remember they were the kind of thing where there was no hype, there was no anything, but everybody in it was like a good actor who was operating at the top of their game. Paxton was in it, Matthew McConaughey was in it, Powers Booth, and I know there were one or two other kind of character actors that you would recognize if you went down through the cast list. The basic conceit of it is that there's an FBI agent who gets approached by a kid, and the kid basically comes to him and says, "Hey, I know who the serial killer is that you've been investigating," and because it's a kid, the guy kind of blows him off. But very quickly, he starts to realize that, no, there's actually something that's going on here, because the kid tells him, "Yeah, it's my brother." They end up kind of, and it has a very, and this is one of those movies that everybody in the universe has tried to imitate at one point or another, so whenever I say this, it always feels like, ugh, really? But it has kind of a Wicker Man vibe, like, you know, a lot of the kind of horror of the movie is not actually like the stuff that you see. It's kind of the psychological horror, and it's kind of, there's a spiritual horror, I guess. I mean, the boys are essentially operating under the tyrannical kind of household rule of their father, who thinks that he's been commanded by God to kill demons disguised as people.
Yeah.
So, you know, there's a lot of Bible imagery. The brother, who is ostensibly the FBI agent, is named Adam. The serial killer is the God's Hand killer. And it really is, it's one of those movies where, and again, kind of likening it to The Wicker Man, where throughout the whole movie you're like, okay, is he actually just being played by this kid? Like, are we going to find out that he's essentially being led to his doom with the promise of resolution, which, you know, it was a slow burn kind of movie, and I think that, like, because it didn't have an A-lister, I mean, Matthew McConaughey's in it, but he was not an A-lister at this point, and because it didn't have, like, a big budget or a big distributor, because I think it was from, let me look, yeah, it's, like, I'm literally looking at it, it's from Lionsgate, which in 2001, Lionsgate hadn't had Twilight yet. And so, like, their big movie the year before this was, like, Dogma. And then their big movie the year of this was, like, Fahrenheit 9/11.
What did they have? Faculty, right? I think probably the only other one.
Was that them, or was did that they Dimension? Do? I thought that was Dimension.
Oh, I think it might be Dimension. Yeah, I think you're right. Yeah, yeah.
But anyway.
Oh, I think their only other big one would be, my God, what was the, the bunch of kids run into a forest with a video camera.
Was that the Blair Witch Project?
Didn't
I thought that was Artisan.
God, I could swear it was Lionsgate.
Well, the other thing is that Lionsgate's one of those studios that has, like, relationships with everybody, so it could be, like, these things could be Artisan, but also Lionsgate. I mean, I'm looking at it right now on their Wikipedia page, and, like, their top 10 highest grossing movies, none of them happened before 2004. So at this point, Lionsgate had never had a movie that grossed $100 million. Because in 2004, they beat 100 million for the first time with Fahrenheit 9/11. That was 119 million. Then every other major hit that they've had has been, let's see, La La Land, Hunger Games, Divergent, and the Day After Tomorrow, and then the Twilight movies. And so, but anyhow, the point of it all being that I remember this being like a hard sell at the video store because like people didn't recognize the cast outside of Paxton and McConaughey, and those guys weren't really like a selling point at that point. People didn't really like, they didn't know what to make of it, but everybody who actually watched this movie ended up really enjoying it. And I feel like part of that was probably that if you were open to the recommendation, then you're probably open to a smarter movie. Cause we made no bones about the fact that it's a deliberate kind of slow burn, almost more of a thriller than a horror movie, but like the nature of it with all the religious stuff and the serial killer, it like feels kind of kind of horror-y.
Yeah, I mean that was really big during that time. Like that was the late 90s and the early 2000s was a really big I think it was when you finally had kind of serious horror and thriller films coming out of the independent film world. And, of course, for the life of me, I can't think of anything else right now. I mean, other than, again, like, you had things like The Faculty, you had things like low-budget films that could make, could make 30, 40 million bucks and be a huge financial blockbuster for them.
Yeah, I remember this being, like, I remember this being a thing that we could like, recommend to people who had rented Cube, which had come out in, like, the late 90s. And as a similar, like, Cube is definitely much more objectively like a sci-fi horror kind of movie, but it has that same kind of slow burn, paranoid, blah 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 kind of thing going on. You also got like Donnie Darko, I think, was the same. It's that same kind of like weird family of kind of subgenres that all get kind of lumped together. But Frailty. We're kind of wandering all over the place on this one. Part of that is, full disclosure. It's been about a week since Paxton passed away because both of us have been either sick or incredibly busy or a little of both. And, so we're talking about this and it's like, I haven't actually seen most of these movies in a really long time. And then I took notes so that we could record this, but then we had to delay the recording like four times, and it's like, yeah, I took notes a week ago.
Yeah. I mean, same here. I mean, I've refreshed a little bit. I mean, obviously because a bunch of the films have been on different cable channels, but I've always caught them, caught the end of them. But mm-hmm. I mean, that ends up being, the kind of, I hate to say it, it's kind of almost perfect for Bill Paxton. Because he's the kind of actor that you're like I said before with the other Bills and Bill and Jeff and wait, was that Bill or was that Jeff mm-hmm. or was that who was that in that film? But he's most of his films. I mean, you go through his catalog, and he has a lot of solid films in there, but they're all mostly films that you're like, shit, I'm trying to remember what that specifically was. Was that the one that had this in it, or was that the one? Because that's a, like as you're describing Frailty, I remember seeing that now.
Yeah.
I just don't. I must have seen it when it came out on video,
mm-hmm.
Because I know that I've seen it because I'm looking at the stills from the movie set, and I'm like, I remember that scene.
Yeah.
I don't remember anything else that happened in it though. I feel bad, but I'm not going to have to. I think it's on Amazon Prime right now, so I'm going to have to go watch it this weekend. What's our next film? I don't know if we decided.
No, we're going by just the list that we made, and so I guess the next thing we can talk about because I know that you had a little bit to say about this is Tombstone.
Ah yes, Tombstone. I've had pneumonia the past week, so I've been working through Tombstone memes with Val Kilmer's character, who has tuberculosis in the film. So I've been going through this film again. Again, I mean, it's another one of those films where it's perfect Bill Paxton, where he's, you know, he's Kurt Russell's brother in the film, right? I think brother, yeah. Right? And he plays the sidekick. I don't know. I don't even know how much screen time he has. I don't know how much spoilers we want to get into what happens to him, but let's just say he's not in a lot of the film. Mm-hmm. But he's so important to that cast and the overall feeling of the film, which again, I'll say that about every single film that we talk about, that I go, no, so, okay. So if Bill Paxton couldn't do that film, who would you put in there? I'd be like, ah, God damn it. I don't know. You know, I mean, it's like the same thing with, you know, it's like with Jeff Bridges and with Bill Pullman. Like, I mean, I guess that like you could interchange a lot of those characters in there, but like, I don't know who else could do this character and do it justice and do it in the way that he, you know, was in the film, how he portrayed. Obviously somebody else would take it off in a different direction or whatever, but he's so singularly made it his own just for the few, the probably 15 minutes, yeah, tops of screen time he had in this film. Because I mean, that was one film that, I mean, Val Kilmer had such memorable roles within it, moments in it, but you know, this was like, I would guess out of the probably 120 minutes of screen time, I would guess that Kurt Russell is probably in 100 minutes, yeah, of it. Well, I mean, which is not shocking considering he's playing the main, you know, not only the main character, he's playing, you know, the only one that anybody fucking cares about.
Yeah. I mean,
so
I think the other interesting thing too is that right around this time was when Bill Paxton was poised to take the next kind of big step forward in his career. Yeah. I mean, you look at, you know, Tombstone came out in 93, and then he had a bunch of like big movies where he had small roles. And then you had Twister and Titanic, and you started to see him taking a whole bunch of leads, including leads in things like A Bright Shining Lie and Frank and, yeah, Jesse, where they didn't meet the kind of success that everybody hoped. But it was like Tombstone was that moment when he was on the cusp of going from, oh yeah, that dude who had 10 minutes in True Lies, to holy shit, he was great in Apollo 13. Now let's put him in Titanic.
Yeah, yeah. It is kind of amazing, though, by the way, when you, like, I believe we had this, I forget what, there was some Marvel, random Marvel character, like, bit character, like, extra, who was in, like, 7 films, oh, yeah, that all grossed over $900 million. But you look at that 3-year thing. He was in Twister, which grossed, let's see how much that grossed, That was a crazy huge. I fucking love Twister. We'll get to that later. But like, so Twister grossed $241 million in 1996.
Right.
Apollo 16, which grossed Twister outdid Apollo 13. Yeah, I mean, so it's like $200 million. Is this what number we were looking at? I don't know. Oh no, okay, no, 300. It looks like 340 million. Mm-hmm. I don't know why the numbers look really weird on this one thing, but obviously Apollo 13 did gangbusters, and then Titanic. Well, we know what Titanic did.
Yeah.
But it's like you go, wow, you know, that's a good run for a supposed character actor he had basically probably the top grossing films for 1994, 1995, and 1996. He was '97. He was a significant character in all of those.
Yeah, and then he got to the point too where he did that thing that, you know, you see so many kind of big actors do, where it's like, after Titanic, he started doing the, like, okay, I'm going to make a Simple Plan, and it's not going to make that much money, yeah, but everybody's going to think it's brilliant, and so then I can go and make Mighty Joe Young for a paycheck.
Yeah.
and like, you see that over the next few, it's like the same year that he did Frailty, he did Spy Kids 2, the same year that he did
Is anyone making any money from the Spy Kids films, though? I feel like literally there is no one making more than $50,000 from the Spy Kids franchise.
I figure Spy Kids 2 like, was the one where they made money, though. Like, because the first one, nobody had any expectations for, and then it was big enough to justify a sequel. And so I kind of feel like when you get to number two is when the studio shelled out some money and you know.
Oh, see, I literally, the way I see, now this is a huge sidetrack, not that we don't always do this, but the way I see the Spy Kids films is literally Rodriguez does it on his studio lot for, like, change. Like, literally the cost that it, and now it's probably shot, I'm sure he probably shot the second one on digital, because he was a super early person on digital. So it literally costs whatever the hard drives cost of the film,
And
no one else got paid, because I can't imagine. You look at some of the stars that are in these films, in the Spy Kids films. I mean, Stallone is in them. You have everybody across the board. Basically, anybody who's ever been in.
Yeah, Ben Harris was in. I think Tim Robbins was in for 15 seconds in the third one or something.
Buscemi's been in it. He has. Yeah. My understanding is he had a recurring role. So did
Bill Paxton. He was Dinky Winks, who was in both the second and the third movies.
But I just love that, even though I think I've watched like half of the first one, and I'll never watch another one of them again, because they're like terrible. They're terrible kid stuff, but it's I just love those films in the way of, like, this is a thing that literally, I think I read an interview with Rodriguez once. He's like, I wanted to make films that my kids could watch. And it's like literally like a dad made a film for his kids with the available things that he had around them. Like, my dad would have made a film distinctly different from that, but it's basically the same equivalency.
Yeah.
Like, my dad had a video camera. He has a video camera. anyway, what were we?
Why don't we move into Twister next, because you were saying you wanted to talk about Twister.
Not that we talked about Tombstone really at all. But Twister. I forget. Is this the one that you haven't seen?
No, that's the one I'll save for last is the one I haven't seen.
Okay. I was about to say, because I'm like, I think this was the film that I've seen more Bill Paxton memorials cover than anything else, because I think it's also the penultimate Bill Paxton film.
Well, in this, like, the actual real life Storm Chasers, did you see the thing where they went to the corners of the earth so that they could create a tribute to him on the radar screens?
No, dude, if you read about this, like, this is a film he went, which you would never think, I don't think you'd think in a million years that he would have done it for this film, but he went, like, method for this film. He spent time living with these people, living with the Storm Chasers, and hanging out with them, getting to know them, knowing the lingo, and, like, literally did work with them for months before this film went off. And this is not... If you haven't seen Twister, I don't know what the fuck you're doing with your life. Seriously. Like, this is one of the most just fun films you might ever see. And it's done well. It's done well, especially for the era. The Twisters are ridiculous. Like, everything looks great. And I just watched a little bit of it. I caught a little bit of it on one of the, you know, late night cable channels recently, and it's amazing how much it still holds up, not only graphics wise, but just, you know, the way that we do kind of action films. I mean, I guess it's an action film. I don't know, you know, but Helen Hunt, Carrie Ills, Philip Seymour Hoffman. I mean, there's just so many great people in this film that it's hard not to just completely fucking love it. And it's also a film that has so many quotable moments as well. It is kind of the ultimate, this to me would be one of the ultimate, like 5 for 5 movies that, like, you force your friend who hasn't seen this film yet, be like, no, we're throwing this one in.
Yeah.
We're watching this.
Yeah.
And this is going to be the one you're going to enjoy the most out of all the films that I forced you to watch out of these five for fives, because this is the best one.
Yeah, and I mean, I think one of the interesting things about a movie like Twister is that it has not aged yet. And we talked a little bit last time about, you know, the idea of The Godfather, where it's like, it's the one that set the status quo, and it's the best, technically on a level, a lot of levels, of the sort of movie that it is. But it very quickly became kind of eclipsed by other people who kind of took its lessons, learned them, and then kind of went one better. I still kind of feel like nobody has entirely figured out how to go one better on Twister yet. And in fact, a lot of the movies that you see that have attempted to do, you know, the man versus nature conflict in the time since then, it just hasn't really worked. Like, they had that volcano movie with Pierce Brosnan that nobody cared about.
Oh, my God.
You know, even The Day After Tomorrow.
Wait, was that the same one with Tommy Lee Jones?
Yes,
I always forget.
I think
if that. So. Okay, it was. Because there was another one that also came out about the same time. There's, because it was like the volcano one was just like the asteroid films, where it had a, it had a another film that came out as well.
Yeah.
The, what was it? Armageddon
and Deep Impact.
Deep Impact, yes, thank you. Yeah.
Deep Impact, which I believe had a porn parody that they didn't even need to change the name.
Womp womp.
But
yeah, oh my God, there's recently, there was an unbelievably forgettable tornado film that came out, and it was so desperately trying to be Twister. I don't even want to mention its name, because I'm also blanking on the title of it, because it was, like I said, it was so unbelievably fucking forgettable. Mm-hmm. And it had so many of the same moments in the film where it was like, no, you shouldn't go there. I think they had like TV news crews as opposed to like meteorological people.
Yeah.
But it's amazing to watch and be like, the budget was probably similar,
yeah,
and the graphics should have been so much better, but they were so much worse. It just played off as like some terrible sci-fi film.
Yeah.
but yeah.
Why don't we transition into the next movie, which is A Simple Plan. And this was an interesting one for me. Like, I was loath to give this a try at first, because honestly, I have never been as in love with Sam Raimi as literally every other person on the planet is. And I don't think I saw this one at the time that it came out. I think I saw this after Spider-Man. And you know, this is one of those weird movies. I ended up falling in love with this movie, but like, I feel like there's just, it had so many things kind of against it. Everybody in this movie is doing some of the best acting of their career, which is good, because in a lot of cases, these are actors who I don't enjoy watching. Like, I actually like, as much as I can see that, yes, he's technically very skilled at what he does. Like, Billy Bob Thornton is just an actor who I very rarely enjoy. Bridget Fonda's kind of the same way.
Yeah.
Like, you get, okay. She was like that kind of weirdly sexy character in Jackie Brown. But other than that, like, she's really forgettable in almost everything. I think that they made, like, Raimi made some really good choices in this movie, and part of that, honestly, was picking actors, excuse me, who could be kind of, you know, who could be what they are without much change. You know, Bridget Fonda is really forgettable, so he made her this kind of, like, white trashy, she wasn't even, like, shrill, she's just, like, the wife. And, like, that's underselling what she did in the movie, because what she did in the movie was actually, like, really interesting and really good, and, like, she moved the plot along. She was not just, like, the wife. But, like, that was her character. She was, like, a very plain, like, middle-class, middle-aged, white lady. Not really middle-aged, because she was, like, 30, but, you know. And, you know, Billy Bob Thornton was the same thing. It's, like, he was a schlubby, kind of off-putting, and everybody in this movie kind of were handpicked to do what they do best. And so you end up with a lot of actors in it where it's like, oh, that guy from that thing, you know, Gary Cole is in it, who you might recognize from The West Wing and Office Space. And you would recognize him from The West Wing and Office Space basically because that's him. Like, that's the character, you know, he's done that one.
Yeah. Thing. Yeah. I don't think that this, I mean, it's amazing when you look at the, when you look at the film catalog of Sam Raimi, who I like more, I agree with you to some extent. I like him more than you do. But you look at it. So he did 92. He did Army of Darkness. Mm-hmm. I love, 95. He did Quick and the Dead, which I'd have to watch again now to see whether or not I love it. The last time I watched it, probably in 2003 or something like that. I loved it, but of course then I also loved films like that then. And then in 98 he did A Simple Plan. And then after that he did For the Love of the Game. And then after that he did The Gift. And then after that he did Spider-Man. So it's like Sam Raimi's career is like, Simple Plan to me is a film that I continually forget that Sam Raimi did and the Coen brothers did not.
Yeah. No, that's
which is a huge compliment because I fucking love the Coen brothers, and I especially fucking love the Coen brothers in the late 90s. Yeah. I'm one of the few people that lost a lot of interest in the Coen brothers after their George Clooney. Oh my God. Oh Brother, We're Out That, which I fucking love that film. It's one of my favorite films of all time, but I enjoy their, you know, I hate to be the guy that says I enjoy their early work.
Well, no, but I mean, it's a point of demarcation because after Oh Brother, Where Art Thou, they went from being kind of the undiscovered talent to, you know, everybody's eyes were on them at that point, and they did they became like Wes Anderson, where it's just like, okay, everybody was really impressed that we did this cool, unexpected thing. Let's do that same cool, unexpected thing 30 or 40 more times now. And that's not to say that they don't do it really well and that those movies aren't by and large very enjoyable, but I think A Simple Plan was one of the last, I think Oh Brother Where Art Thou was one of the last Coen Brothers movies where you could say, yeah, I didn't see that coming.
Yeah, most certainly. I mean, especially with that cast too. Mm-hmm. I mean, Billy Bob Thornton, I'd have to look at I forget what he was doing again. It certainly wasn't within, I didn't necessarily expect it in his wheelhouse, I guess, but Thornton, overall it was a...
Yeah, Thornton right before, A Simple Plan, I feel like he had just done, Sling Blade and become like a thing that everybody cared about. You know, and right around that same time, I want to say probably a little after this was when he did... Pushing Tin.
He actually did that the same year. He did Armageddon and Primary Colors.
Oh yeah.
I forgot about Primary Colors. Yeah. but either way, Primary Colors, he was fantastic as basically Jimmy Carville.
Yeah.
He was great in it. I think that's actually where I actually kind of really started liking him as an actor. But yeah, then he did Pushing Tin, which he was great in, and then Bandits, of course, as well, which is great.
Yeah, as I'm looking at his, it's funny because I was saying earlier that he's not a character who, or not an actor I'm really drawn to. It's like, as I'm actually looking, there was like a 5-year period where he could kind of do no wrong, and I really like a lot of these things that he's doing. And then like he did Monsters Ball, which everybody but me loved, and then there's like this long stretch of things where I'm just like, I either didn't like it or I don't remember him in it.
Yeah, speaking of, he was in Tombstone.
Yeah.
That is weird.
I totally literally did not know that.
I can't place him in that film, but he has a named character, Johnny Tyler. I can't.
Yeah.
I'm going to have to watch Tombstone again tonight, which I got to figure out whether I have the DVD or not, but, shit.
I will say, when you cobble together some of the things that we've been talking about here in this The Man Who Wasn't There is one of those weird movies that I used to recommend to people all the time at the video store. It was a black and white kind of neo-noir thing. He was in it with Frances McDormand and I can't even remember. Oh yeah, James Gandolfini. And like that's yep. one where and again, we're kind of all over the map here because basically we're talking about a movie in the form of A Simple Plan, where mm-hmm. you have five Bill Paxton like actors in it. You have all these people who, like, when you actually look at their IMDb page, you just get off on a tangent. It's like, oh yeah, Sam Raimi did that. Oh yeah, Billy Bob Thornton did that. Oh yeah, I forgot about The Ice Harvest completely.
Never forget about The Ice Harvest. But anyway.
But yeah, and he was in Parkland, which one of the running jokes on our Archie Digest podcast is that you can pretty much connect anybody in Hollywood within 6 degrees of separation from Smallville. Parkland was the JFK assassination drama that starred Peter Welling, the main character from Smallville.
Yeah. Oh, shit. It's weird. I've actually still have not seen either Parkland or the hairdressing drama that Billy Bob Thornton appeared in, which is weird because the Coen brothers are probably just my easy one off. Yeah. Like, oh, what's your favorite director? The Coen brothers.
Yeah.
Not that they're two people, but you know, whatever. But yeah. So.
Yeah. So yeah, the next two movies are movies that I know you have more to say about than I do, because I've seen Haywire once and it was in theaters. I really remember enjoying it, but I don't remember much about Paxton's role in it specifically.
This is a film that it's weird. I was super excited. Again, I feel bad that this brings a side tangent off, but I was super excited that Gina Carano was going to be in Deadpool, but then she was kind of a shit villain.
Mm-hmm.
Like, she kind of just I don't know what the fuck she was. Like, I used to read Marvel comics or whatever, and I don't know what the fuck her character was. I literally don't ever remember coming across it, and it was just one of those, that's a real waste, considering she's one of the few kind of people outside of acting that does action stuff. I mean, she's WCW, I think.
No, she was former. WWE? No, she was a real fighter. Like, she was MMA.
Oh, MMA. I'm sorry. She's like a person that can actually do this shit.
Yeah.
And then they waste her They waste her on a person who I'll be very surprised if we ever see her again.
Yeah, I doubt it. I mean, and you're right. Like, one of the things about Haywire was that Steven Soderbergh wanted to make a movie that really took advantage of the fact that, like, you have, Carano, who is, like, not only intensely likable and really marketable and very attractive, but also, like, she's, like, an actual fighter, and this is what she does for a living, and blah, 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 blah. And so, like, you can have her instead of having stunt people, With Deadpool, like, I thought the big thing that annoyed me about her role in Deadpool was that she, like, it you didn't need anybody who could fight for her role in Deadpool.
Yeah.
Like, her whole thing was, like, she's big and imposing, and, like, but most of the time when she's, like, punching somebody, it's like when he's chained to a table. Like,
yeah.
And, like, yeah, there were a couple of scenes where it was like, okay, she's super badass and she's, like, throwing people around. But it was, like, for 40 seconds at a time while it was being intercut with seven different things.
But it's also one of those few, very few roles where you could have actually had some brainless action person do the role. Like, does she have more than one line in the entire film? I don't remember her having more than one.
I feel like she has a handful, because I feel like she was the one who was, like, humorless. Like that, I think that was her whole shtick was that, you know, because obviously, whatever the main villain's name was, that was one of the weaknesses of Deadpool was the villains. They were kind of like, I wanted access or, whatever the guy's name was, to
Ajax.
Ajax, yes. I just wanted him to die earlier in the movie. Like, I wanted Deadpool to, like, knock that dude's head off and then, like, have to fight the next person. Or for, like, you know, once the power vacuum is there for Gina Carano to step up and be the big bad.
Yeah.
Like, he was just so fucking not compelling at all. But he was, like, smarmy and sarcastic and trying to out Deadpool Deadpool. Whereas, like, Gina Carano's whole, like, shtick was that she was not trying to do that. She was like, her whole thing was that he was being a smartass and she wasn't having it.
Yeah. Because I mean, that's the big thing about this. I'm like blowing through here. Blood and Bone, I guess, is her only other thing. And then, yeah, that's it. So the only thing other things she did before Haywire was Blood and Bone, which literally was basically an MMA film. Yeah. Yeah. And X-Con takes the underground fighting world by storm. Shocking.
Yeah, exactly.
So she's in this and she's in this film. And again, I apologize, Pill Baxton, that we're going on the sidetrack,
but
she's
having,
it's
having like pulled up some of the stuff. I can talk about it a little bit because I finally remember kind of his role in this. This is one of the few roles where I feel like Bill Paxton had to do the physical transformation thing that tends to give actors a lot of credit. Because, like, most of the time, Bill Paxton is just Bill Paxton. And it's, like, some version of, like, the same kind of face and attitude and everything that you've seen a million times. This is the movie where he had, like, the terrible hair and the glasses and the shitty mustache. Yeah. And it was like, oh, yeah, like, this didn't have to be Bill Paxton. This could have been anybody. But Bill Paxton, like, got cast because he was bringing something special to.
Yeah, he's basically a history. He's basically a history author.
Yeah.
To Mallory Kane, a.k.a. Gina Carano's character, who is a paid hit woman, basically, kind of CIA sort of thing. And, you know, and again, like, to finish my rant, is that she goes straight up against, she's with Channing Tatum, Ewan McGregor, Antonio Banderas, Michael Douglas, Michael Fassbender. She has a lot of time with Michael Fassbender. And there's no moment in which I go, oh, shit. Michael Fassbender is better at acting than her.
Yeah.
And he's quite good. But let's put that aside because this is one thing that always bothers me because I actually really like her and wish she had a better career than she currently does. But Paxton was he had a very small role. And again, this is such a Paxton thing. He had a very small role. I distinctly remember him from this film, and he probably had, I would guess, 10 minutes of film time in the whole thing. And he owned that part of it. And I think most of it was cell phone conversations too. Yeah. So it's like him walking around and it's like, I don't know. I mean, cause I guess this is something we didn't really talk about, but it's like, he's one of those actors that actually has a very, very memorable voice.
Mm-hmm.
And especially in this film where he's literally, I think he literally is talking on the phone for probably half of his screen time. So you're really listening to anything more than, you know, paying attention to his acting. And, you know, he actually, especially out of the Bill and Jeff crew, mm-hmm. as I said before, he probably has, you know, I mean, like each one of them to an extent has their own memorable voice. But I mean, like, I know that I could name, I'd be like, oh, that's Bill Paxton in a moment. And that speaks speaks volumes. But, you know, speaks volumes to, you know, a lot of the roles that he had. You know, I mean, his famous line from Aliens, which weirdly I don't think we're actually talking about.
No.
You know, like where it's like, oh, it's fucking over, man. It's fucking
game over.
You know, game over. I'm sorry, of course.
Which was the thing that, like, again, kind of there. It's one of those weird things where when you have a guy who has like a handful of iconic roles, like the temptation is to like call them up whenever, you know, he passes away. And like, there were so many people tweeting and so many news stories that were using the game over quote. And then there was like almost like a half an hour later, there was like an immediate backlash of like, really? That's what you're going to go with when this guy dies? Like,
I feel like sometimes there's inappropriate ones, but I also feel like I find no Paxton against anybody else in the world, but I mean, like, I feel like he would have been fine with you doing that. There's no bad part of that. It's not humiliating him. It's not mocking him. It's not anything. You know, I think that's a good play.
Yeah, no, I agree too, but it was like just acknowledging that, like, yeah, that was a thing that I remember happened all day long that day.
Yeah. I mean, I hesitated using the GIF, because I was just like, yeah, I just don't want to be that guy that gets called out for it. But it's like, it is one of those things where it's like, yeah, no, that's probably his most famous role. I can't think of any other, at least that's no other, there's no other moment in Bill Paxton's career that I can remember more than that.
Oh yeah.
Which is obviously, you know, it's like, well, that's why it's the, you know, probably if I search Bill Paxton GIF right now, I'm sure that's probably the top one. Oh, yeah. But
well, and then the last one that we were going to talk about tonight is one, like I said, I have not seen. So you're going to have to talk a little bit about Navy SEALs.
Ooh, Navy SEALs. Oh, my God. God, when's the last time I saw Navy SEALs? That's, you know, I mean, the film that we all know. I am curious on, and if anybody's listening and is actually, you know, listening this far in, as we always preface, well, we know what the data is on what people listen to and how long people listen in and things, which, by the way, according to IMDb, Navy SEALs is up 455% in popularity this week.
Yeah.
It's Navy SEALs is basically been the inside joke probably since what? When did Clerks come out?
1994.
Yeah, since 1994, I feel like this film has had a larger joke. It's been more known because of Clerks than actually when it was actually released. Yeah. And this is a film that actually had a decent cast with Charlie Sheen and Bill Paxton and a bunch of people who were relatively well known in the mid 90s or early 90s, mm-hmm. I should say. But it's just another, you know, what's the plot description? An elite Navy SEALs unit set out to locate and destroy a stockpile of U.S. built Stinger missiles that have fallen into terrorist hands. So basically, like 80% of the action films that came out of the 90s.
Yeah.
Late 80s, early 90s, you know, whether it be Commando or anything else, the most generic terrorist organization imaginable. They could be British, they could be Russian, they could be, you know, Middle Eastern maybe, because this was the 90s, so, you know, the Iraq War had happened.
Yeah.
it's a completely and utterly forgettable film, but another one of those, like, it is the film that I think was made for, you know, 11 o'clock at night on TBS.
Yeah.
You're on, and there's nothing else that it's on, and you're like, ooh, Navy SEALs. So it's like, I don't know what else I could say about this film other than that, because that's literally about it, you know?
I mean, there's lots and lots of, I mean, if you Google Paxton right now, because he just passed away, and there's a whole conversation, like, there's lots and lots of other movies that you should probably check. It's one of those, like, there's other movies you should check out way before you check out some of these movies, to be perfectly honest with you.
Oh, yeah.
But this was a good kind of cross sample of his movies, and this is the kind of thing that we would try to recommend to people as like a 5 for 5 at the video store, because they aren't all like the big three movies that everybody knows, you know. And even beyond, like, Aliens and Titanic, and you know, he had bit roles in like the Terminator and I think Predator franchises, and you know, so like, this is a guy who you see everywhere. There's a guy who there's like plenty of other things that you're going to want to check out that he did. Besides Big Love, he also did Hatfields and the McCoys with Kevin Costner, which won a bunch of awards.
Which is great. Yeah.
And so, like, you know, this is one of those things. It's like, take a look at the movies on this list. I think that you will be better for having seen them. You'll enjoy, especially kind of the weird, quirky cross section we've picked of his performances and his roles.
Yeah.
But yeah, probably you can go down his IMDb page and pick, like, you know, 10 things at random, or go to any of the other, like, 100. You know, there's a 10 best roles on Rolling Stone right now, and do just about as well.
Yeah, I mean, I can't, like, was it, yeah, Hatfields and McCoys, I absolutely loved. What's the, I'm trying to remember, Edge of Tomorrow is just an overall fantastic film. He has a very, very tiny part in that film, but he's great. I mean, it's Bill Paxton, he's great in that. Overall, the film is great, even though that film did confusingly terribly at the box office, considering it was such a great film and had all the right moving parts, but for some reason, I don't know why. I'm trying to remember if it was like, because it was that the moment that everyone decided they hated Tom Cruise? I'm trying to remember.
I think that was a big part of it. I mean, I also think that part of it was just one of those, they didn't know how to market that movie. Like, and I think they had a last minute title change, because it's based on a manga.
Oh yeah,
and it's not a manga. It's based on like a Japanese novel, but like it didn't share the name of the book that it was based on, and I feel like it was just one of those movies that they kept trying to change their mind on exactly what it was that they were doing with it, and what they eventually settled on was, we don't know, but there's people in it, so watch this movie.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah, I mean, that's a film where it's like, there's almost nobody that's not good in it. The action is great. The graphics are amazing. The plot is fantastic. Tom Cruise actually isn't his usual Tom Cruise-y self as much as he always is. Mm-hmm. You know, he's not Mission Impossible Tom Cruise as much. You know, and there's so many other, you know, U571, which we skipped over, but... holy crap, that's one of the better, that's up there with, Hunt for Red October for me on submarine movies. I mean, not that there's a huge catalog of films of submarine movies that I know of, but I mean, I would say, like, if you're gonna watch two submarine films, you know, three, because, there's Hunt for Red October. No, there's Hunt for Red October, and then there's, there's one other submarine film, and then U-571 are the three American ones that I would definitely recommend. Oh my god, I'm gonna go nuts on C.S. Muncie. Will yell at me because there are some of his favorite films.
Nice. All right. Well, any final thoughts before I stop recording and go complete the editing on Archie Digest, a Riverdale podcast, which everybody who's listening to this should subscribe to.
I by the way, I gave you a plug in my most recent podcast, because I'm using the interview I did with you for another podcast later on. So, but yes, you all should be subscribing to the Archie Riverdale podcast. And also, for fuck's sake, if you're not watching that goddamn show, I don't know what the fuck is wrong with you. Unless, of course, you're trying to watch the show, and then there's fucking basketball on for some fucking reason.
Yeah.
Goddamn it, CW, what the fuck is wrong with you?
It really does, you know, the thing that ticks me off about it is, like, I'm pretty, like, I get the ratings element of it, and so I'm pretty open to it when it's, like, when it's the local team. But, like, if it's not at least fucking Syracuse, if it's just like, these guys are in, you know, like, there's all these things that I think it's like the Big Ten or whatever that we're in now. And it's like, we're just watching Big Ten teams, and I'm sitting here going, like, it doesn't matter anymore. Like, first of all, we're in the ACC tournament, so we didn't even make March Madness, which means doesn't, like, whatever anybody in our division or whatever does, it doesn't fucking matter. It's not going to hurt or help Syracuse in any way.
But why does CW why does CW have college basketball?
I assume what it's just part of demo? The CBS.
I get it overall that they're like, fuck it, we'll just throw this random thing on there. But it's like, especially when there's a show that's not only as good, but they're obviously, you know, they're struggling for ratings to some level. Mm-hmm. And this has nothing. I apologize, Bill Paxton, if you're listening from high above. But fucking hell, you should goddamn understand the struggle for ratings and the struggle for getting attention.
Yeah, I mean, that's
as a character actor like yourself. I don't think you were ever in a sports film, but goddamn it, you would have been a great basketball coach in a film. Shit.
Yeah, one thing that I will say, just because it actually kind of makes sense, is talk about things that are kind of struggling for the ratings. You can check out Bill Paxton's last work in Training Day, which is probably, I assume, not going to come back for a second season, because Paxton was one of the two leads and was essentially like the character to watch. Like he you know, they race swapped.
Was he Denzel's character?
Yeah,
basically,
he was Denzel's character. They essentially race swapped it so that the idealistic rookie was the white guy, and the seasoned crazy ass veteran was the idealistic veteran was, or the idealistic rookie was the black guy, and the crazy guy was white. So that instead of having crazy Denzel and idealistic Ethan Hawke, now it's Bill Paxton who's a little crazy. So it's basically at this point a dead show walking, because I can't imagine I can't imagine a scenario where they want to replace Paxton. It would be basically impossible anyway. And then the show was already on the bubble. It's been having, you know, ratings trouble from jump, and it was basically one of those shows that they were considering renewing basically on the strength of really good reviews. You know, for those of you who are listening, on the strength of really good reviews, hey, give it a try. I'm pretty sure if you go on like Vudu or Amazon or iTunes, you can get the pilot for free. I know that you could, at least when it first launched, they were offering it for free on digital platforms to encourage people to check out the show. And so, you know, that's something that, you know, to bring the ratings conversation full circle and to say like, hey, something you probably haven't seen because nobody's watching it. But it's Paxton's last work, is he has completed the 13 episode order on Training Day. And at this point with Paxton passing away, I can't imagine, even if they weren't going to pick it up, that they wouldn't run out the season. So I imagine, you know, he passed away, you know, 2 weeks ago when it was four episodes in. So you have like 7 hours of Bill Paxton's work left. And then, you know, I think he's got two or three movies that are still in the pipeline that are going to come out at various points over the next 2 years. But in terms of right this minute, check out Training Day. I haven't actually seen it myself, but it's one of those things that I downloaded the free pilot and I'm like, one of these days soon, I'm going to get around to it.
Yeah.
All right. Cool. Well, we will be back soon, much sooner than last time. I think it's been about a month since we recorded anything, but we went and saw Logan. So we've got thoughts on that, but we wanted to talk about Bill Paxton because, like we said, it was a weird situation where we wanted originally to record on the day that he passed away and to really like say, "Hey, Bill Paxton, celebrating you know your awesomeness," the real world interfered with that, and so now we're like a week and a half in or whatever, and it's kind of like, well, let's make sure that we actually do it, because like it's one of those things that like not doing it right away while there's search traffic doesn't mean that we shouldn't give him some just due.
No, Paxton was one of the few times when you see some of the non, like, you know, I mean, like Brad Pitt died, you know, that like that sort of level, or somebody who's like, oh, well, you know, if Ian McClellan passed away, God forbid, let's hope he fucking doesn't. Because him and Patrick Stewart, I just want to have him, those two people live for a fucking ever. I would happily die before those two people do. especially considering Patrick Stewart has had his, like, he's now just having his, like, he's adopting puppies and shit like that on social media. So I'm like, I'm really fine with him just having his life. But he's one of those guys that I think some of his work, his best work, was ahead of him, and it never. I can't say he's never gotten really his due, because I think he's gotten his due, because he's gotten, when he's done really great work, it's gotten the attention that it was deserved. But he's also one of those guys that, you know, never had, you know, I compare the Bill and the Jeff, and Bill Pullman, you know, kind of goes down in history as Independence Day. You know, I'm sure he had other ones. And then Jeff Bridges will always be the dude, and be like beloved and, you know, and worshiped for that. But Paxton, you know, other than, I guess, Aliens, you know, he didn't really have enough of those moments in his films. Yeah. He was just always a solid fucking actor, that didn't like own the moment or didn't have that, like that one line, or that one speech like, Pullman did in Independence Day or whatever. I just feel like he needs a dessert either, because those are the guys that really hold kind of Hollywood together. You know, I mean, as much as I personally dislike the politics and human being that is James Woods, I feel like James Woods, when he passes away, probably sooner rather than later, hopefully, as a man who's personally attacked me on Twitter, as I think probably almost everybody has had that moment now, so it's not a really special moment. Wow. I can't think of a James Woods moment that stands out, but holy shit, when he passes away, and I hate talking about this way to like people who are in their 60s, but still, when he passes away, like, I don't know if people will be able to pull together shit other than like his Family Guy stuff.
Yeah.
And that pisses me off, because I mean, fucking Salvador, was one of probably the best films I think that's ever been made and ever been printed on film. And, you know, even though he's kind of, betrayed every sort of, thought that went into that film in his own personal life, that film, to me, is one of the reasons I went into photojournalism to begin with. And, you know, there's a ton of actors like that, you know, will never get the moment that they deserve on, you know, whether it be EW or whatever, not get the, you know, I mean, it still pisses me off. I'm sure they could have fit him in if they wanted. Maybe there's some rule that I don't know of on the Oscars, but like Bill Paxton not being included on this year's Oscar poll. Is there just a 2016 like cutoff or something like that I don't know about? Because that really fucking pissed me off, because I'm like, I would have volunteered to do that edit and do that render. But I mean, I don't know. I could be completely wrong. There's probably some physical, like just actual, like, no, January 1st, 2017 is the cutoff. It doesn't fucking matter. We won't do anything more, but like there's a lot of actors out there that I think that we need to respect more while they're still around, that don't get the attention. Because I mean, Bill Paxton, again, you go back through his film catalog, he's the guy that held together, I think, so many of those films that we love and that we want and that he was in. And without him, I don't know if those films would be, you know, Simple Plan. I don't think a Simple Plan would have been anywhere near the film that it is without him.
Yeah. You know? Absolutely.
But anyway.
All right. Well, we will be back with more and a little bit lighter touch soon. Yep. In the meantime, I'm gonna go edit my other podcast because it's 2:15 in the morning, so why not?
Fun time. Well, good luck, sir.
All right, I'll talk to you soon.
Talk to you later. That's it, man. Game over, man. It's game over.